On today's episode of The Good Word, we discuss the return of Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic making a statement against Victor Wembanyama, and the Cleveland Cavaliers still have something to prove. That and producer John on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. You're part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday. It is me and producer John. We had a gangload of games last night, including everything that happened in Philadelphia and Golden State, which means we're going to hear from producer John on what he saw with his Dallas Mavericks. But first, we're going to start with the return of the MVP. Now, John, we should probably have some old-fashioned WWF music because I feel like Joel Embiid was engaging in some good old-fashioned chicanery yesterday. Didn't show up to shoot around. Nobody knew where he was. He was listed as out. And then all of a sudden, a half hour before the game, Joel Embiid is playing. That feels like the Ultimate Warriors music or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like someone's running down the aisle of their theme song. And I know he's a WWE DX guy. You know what I mean? Like, that sort of thing. I just think he likes playing the hero. Joel Embiid loves to, you know, surprise everybody and shock everybody. You saw the interview, if you didn't see the interview, with one of the guests of The Good Word, Jared Greenberg, last night, where they asked him, how are you feeling? Not good, not good. You know, like that sort of thing. After he had 24, 6 boards, 7 assists, and 3 steals, including a big steal in the last minute of the game, he looked good. He labored around a lot, but Joel Embiid always labors around, no matter what the circumstances. He could be completely healthy. He's going to labor around. He's going to sweat profusely. He's going to act like, you know, he's coming home to you, Elizabeth. Like, that's how he moves around, even when he's scoring 70. I'm wondering how this changes things for the 76ers. It's a weird space, and we talked about it a little bit with Jason Goff on Monday. Go check that show out. But coming back from a meniscus surgery, he hasn't been able to do a lot of running. Or any running, I'm quite sure. And he's wearing a bulky knee brace, you know, that he covered up to make it, you know, the appearance, to make it look like it wasn't some big old bulky knee brace. But it was. So you want to get him in shape. You also want to stay out of the play-in. But you also want him to get enough conditioning and in-game shape, in-game action, that you're really ready. So I'm sure you want to get out of play-in, but those 2 extra games or that extra game, that could actually help him in a way. I'm just very curious how all of this is going to work for the 76ers. You only got a handful of games left. You got some back-to-back, not a lot of back-to-backs, but you got, I think they have 1 back-to-back in there. And I'm just really fascinated by a fully healthy Tyrese Maxey. And don't forget, they added Buddy Hield. They added Kyle Lowry for the vet presence and everything else. Like, there's a lot that they've done since Joel Embiid has last played. And I believe their record when Joel Embiid has played is 27-8. Now, mind you, that's not indicative of what he's going to do in the playoffs or indicative of what the Philadelphia 76ers were going to do. They were never number one in the East because Boston has run away and hidden from everybody. But 27-8 in the 35 games that Embiid has played in, that's a big enough sample size for you to say that this is a team that, if they play maybe the Milwaukee Bucks in round one, if they wind up in the seventh, if they wind up in the play-in, and you get the 7th seed, I don't know who I would necessarily pick in that series, just because I don't have the greatest level of confidence in the Milwaukee Bucks right now. I don't know who you can have real confidence in the Eastern Conference. And I'm not saying that this is the year that Philly's going to break through and actually go to a conference final. Like, as weak as the Eastern Conference has been, the Philadelphia 76ers of Joel Embiid, James Harden, Ben Simmons, you know, at one time, Jimmy Butler. None of those teams have ever made the conference finals. And now this could be the year. I got a hard time seeing it. But when you have an MVP who was pretty much destroying the league before he hurt himself, he was drafting 35, 11 boards. He was like dropping six Jokic's a game. Like he had risen as a playmaker and he had found something, not just at the block, but on the elbow, at the free throw line. Like he was evolving and growing his game and even actually being a better player than he was last year. Now, the question I have is this. One of the questions I have, how's he going to deal with the officiating? Because the officiating has affected some players, one of those players we're going to get to, like shortly after this. If those ticky-tack fouls aren't going to be called, and you could see that Chet Holmgren charge block, that was a bang-bang call that honestly I thought should have went the other way because Embiid has this great gift of leaning in and initiating contact. And we've seen in the second half of this season, the league is no longer, or the officials rather, are no longer rewarding that at the rate that they rewarded that before. But when Joel Embiid injured his knee against Golden State, you know, a couple months ago, it was different settings. It was different rules. So he's going to have to adjust to the way the game's been officiated. He also is not a premier playoff player. His stats go down precipitously in the postseason. So, John, what did you see, or what did you make of what you saw from Joel Embiid last night?
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts. I'm going to work backwards from what you just said, because the more physical officiating, like we keep calling it that, right? Like they're calling the games differently. They're being more physical. They're not allowing players to lean in and pick up the ticky-tack foul. There's another name for that. That's playoff officiating. This is how they ref the games in the playoffs. And it's part of the reason we all know it that Joel Embiid has struggled in the playoffs. It's a reason why James Harden has struggled in the playoffs. There's any number of players who, like Joel Embiid is an incredible player, but he's been able to lean in, get fouls, get to the free throw line and add like 10 extra points a game.
Mm-hmm.
Just from, you know, picking up those little fouls. And that's why his numbers tend to go down in the playoffs. So he's got to deal with that, but he is an amazing basketball player.
Yes, he is.
And I was watching that game last night. I had like two thoughts. And the first one was, because remember, we used to talk a lot about Joel's like weight and his eating and not being able to like stay in shape. I saw him and I was like, wow, he's in good shape. Like he showed up skinny, not fat, after a couple months off. And he looked like he was, like you said, he was laboring, but he was moving well. He's just moving slowly because that's what he does. So my first thought was Joel looked good. And my second thought was after they beat the Thunder without Tyrese Maxey, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. The Sixers were a really good team before Embiid got hurt. And I kind of forgot just how good they were. And like last night was a peek back into that, even without Maxey. So I'm excited to see where this goes. I like that he's got a little on-ramp into the playoffs here. And, you know, you look around the East, the only reason Al Horford is on the Boston Celtics is to try and slow down Joel Embiid. If 37-year-old Al Horford, I'm guessing on the age here, if 37-year-old Al Horford can't slow down Joel Embiid, the Sixers have a really good chance of beating the Celtics in a playoff series.
You think so?
I do. And like, same thing with the Bucks. Like a 37-year-old Brook Lopez, he's a great basketball player. But a big reason he's on that team is they need a big guy that they can throw at Joel and be like, here, we need you to slow him down. And there's a world in which those guys age out of being able to slow Embiid down before Embiid slows down himself. So if I was a Sixers fan, I would be very, very excited about their path through the playoffs because if Maxey is healthy and playing well and Embiid, I don't know, he came back and played 30 minutes. Like I thought he was going to play like 13, 14, look a little rusty. He didn't look rusty. He looked like he was in shape, even if it's not game shape, and he'll get there over the next week or two. I'm excited for him and the Sixers. I thought it looked great.
Well, I will say this. multiple things. One, no Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, no Jalen Williams yesterday.
True.
So that skews things, especially from a win-loss perspective. Secondly, Oklahoma City is a skinny team. Like, they had no one who was going to be able to guard Joel Embiid or keep him out of the lane if he so chose to go that route. That's, like you said, that's not everybody in the Eastern Conference. And for your first game back, you're going to be playing a lot off of adrenaline and passion. And he had that WWF entrance and all that type of stuff. Like, it was very dramatic. So dramatic to the point that the NBA said, hey, y'all, we can't have this type of thing happening when we're dealing with a gambling investigation. You know what I mean? Like, we can't have you being listed as out, 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 out. And then all of a sudden, you're upgraded to questionable. And then you are upgraded to playing. Fool me for believing that there's some chicanery possibly going on with Joel Embiid and or Daryl Morey, who are not always, shall we say, forthcoming with things like this. Okay? But I think in the day of transparency, like, it makes for great TV. It makes for a lot of great things from just a, you know, from a theater standpoint. But you have to also keep the integrity of the game intact. And I'm sure Oklahoma City was not preparing as if Joel Embiid wasn't going to play. I'm sure they weren't surprised. So it's just a lot going on. Philly is one of those teams. They are Clippers East. Got to believe it when I see it. And the Clippers have at least reached the conference final when they were without their best player. So the 76ers would love to get to where the Clippers have been. That's a phrase the Clippers have never heard in the history of their entire franchise. They have never been anybody's big brother or anybody's, you know, relationship goals. You know what I mean? They ain't never been that, right? So speaking of, you know, big men, I didn't see the game. I was kind of dipping in and out. But the Nuggets and the Spurs, and not really Nuggets and Spurs, Jokic and Big Vic. Fat man, Big Slim. That's what it is. And Fat Man had 42, 16, 6 assists, 2 blocks, and a steal. Big Slim said, I'll take you. I'll accept that and give you 23, 15, 8 assists, 9 blocks, and a steal. Now, who were 4 of those blocks on? 4 of those blocks were on the presumptive MVP, Nikola Jokic. Like, you know what that felt like to me, John? That felt like to me, Jokic not just saying we have to keep pace with the Timberwolves, we have to keep pace with Oklahoma City for this battle for the first seed. For me, that felt like Jokic acknowledging that Wembanyama is coming. Wembanyama is here, and that I have to literally put a 40 ball on him to just establish a level or keep a level of dominance. You know what I mean? Like, you bring your best against a guy like that when he has dreams or real thoughts of being able to catch you. The problem is Big Slim almost had a quadruple double last night. Literally, 2 assists. If any of those dudes could hit a shot, or if he hit one more block, like, I literally saw him. Like, John, before we were in pre-show, you asked me, how many times did Big Vic actually jump? He jumped for a decent amount of them, but there was one where literally, I think it was Reggie Jackson. Poor Reggie. Reggie came down the lane, and Reggie tried to throw up a floater, and Big Vic just put his paw up there. It was like Randy Moss on a go route or something. Like, just chucked that hand up and Tom Brady threw it. Randall Cunningham was Randy Moss's quarterback, I think, his rookie year. Okay, yes. Or Dante Culpepper. I was thinking Dante Culpepper and I said Randall Cunningham. Sometimes you get the black quarterbacks mixed up. But I had him. I had it all the way correct, right? That's what it felt like with Big Vic. He literally just snatched the ball, a floater. Like, who snatches a floater out of midair if you're Jurassic Park? Like, he's not just, like, the extraterrestrial, like, from Jurassic Park. No, he's the entire park, right? Except the humans don't win at the end. That's what that is. This ain't Jeff Goldblum, you know, riding on the way out saying, you know, some goofy line. No, Big Vic is actually the entire Jurassic Park who's going to win in the end. I don't know how he's going to win in the end, but he's going to win in the end. And he was stuffing Jokic at the rim, John. He was stuffing him. He was jumping, but he was stuffing him. And I felt like that was Jokic saying, okay, young fella, I know you're coming, but I got a big dog, got to bite you. You know what I mean? John, I don't have kids, and I'm not saying that this is analogous to the relationship. I don't have kids, but one thing I am strongly and staunchly a believer in is I don't care if it's Go Fish, Uno, Spades, Monopoly. You beat your kids' ass, okay? You show them no mercy, all right? Like, my best friend literally had a $100 bill in his pocket. I thought it was like a $100 bill. It was no Monopoly money. He pulled it out. And I was like, it's not Monopoly money. He was like, yeah. And he was like, I was like, are you letting them beat you yet? He was like, no. He was like, my son out here trying to cheat, you know, trying to run off my property. Nah, man, count them steps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you land on, if you are at Baltic Avenue, baby, you going to pay.
There's no, are you letting him beat you yet? It goes the other way. I let my kid beat me for about 5 years, and she's 6 now. And I told her on her 6th birthday, I was like, from now on, I am trying to beat you as hard as I can. This is when the life lessons start. You got a little confidence. You learned how to play the game. You got a taste of victory. Now you got to earn it.
Smash.
That's how that works.
Smash. I like it. Raise the children up, as the Bible says, or whatever the hell, you know, whatever the hell is in the good book, right? That's what I feel like Jokic is at. He's like, look, man, I know you are coming. I know you are here, but I'm going to get my last wins on you while I can. And this is a presumptive three-time MVP saying this to a teenager, by and large. Hey, y'all remember all that stuff about, you know, rookie of the year? That conversation's over. Conversation over. Remember all that stuff about, you know, we don't know if Victor Wembanyama can make all defensive team because, you know, how good are you if your team sucks defensively? I don't care. He's on my ballot. And if he's not on yours, you will be object of ridicule. You know who's going to ridicule you? Me. Right here. I want to see the ballots. If he's not in your top 10 defensive players, now granted, because you guys have the options of putting him anywhere on the ballot because it's positionless and all that stuff, that's fine. He's going on my ballot regardless because he is not just a top 10 defender. He might be a top 3 defender at this point. So I've done 4 blocks since the All-Star break. I don't give a damn how bad your team is. Or how bad your team defense is. No. Now, before we go to our last game yesterday, John, I know, has a scorching hot take on one Glenn Doc Rivers. The Washington Wizards of Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma, they beat the Bucks last night. Dame didn't play. You should still beat the Bucks. I know the Bucks are second in the East, and it doesn't feel like there's a real threat with, you know, 6 or 7 games left that the Cleveland Cavaliers, who we'll talk about later, will catch them, or that the New York Knicks, who've lost 3 in a row and basically are like 2 games out of the play-in, will catch them either. But that ain't the point. The Bucks need to be playing good basketball at this stage, and you can't afford to be dropping games to the Wizards of Washington. You know what I mean? You can't do that. Like, they used to be that they were going to be the Wizards of Virginia, which, baby, let me tell you, Virginia Wizards, they might have had to change that name again had they moved to Virginia. Okay, John, do you know why they would have had to change that name to something else?
Are there no wizards in Virginia?
There are wizards in Virginia. John, that's actually quite the problem.
I don't know anything about this. You want to educate me, or are we keeping this on the down low?
Let's just, okay, how about this, John? Just Google the term Grand Wizards.
Okay. Yeah, let's change that name for sure. I get what you're saying now. Okay.
Hey, they had a problem with them being the Washington Bullets because of alleged gun violence. Baby, let me tell you, if you are the Virginia Wizards, you're better off being the Virginia Slims. You're better off with your logo being a pack of cigarettes, being a pack of Swishers, than the Virginia Grand Wizards. Are you out of your damn minds? But either way, sorry about that detour. John, you got to take. I just threw John way off. John was not expecting that one.
No.
He wasn't. Sorry about that, John. I have a twisted sense of humor sometimes.
No, you're good. You're good. So, as you said, the Bucks lost to the Wizards. No one should lose to the Wizards. Definitely not a competing team. And I have this tweet from Eric Name from The Athletic, who covers the Bucks. This is his tweet. The Bucks are now 18-20 on the road this season after this 1-2 road trip. After the game, I asked Doc Rivers what he thinks the Bucks have been unable to do on the road that has led to their struggles. Here's his response. I don't know. I think focus? I don't know what it is. You know, it's funny. I've actually been sitting back and watching everything. Not just our players, but our travel crew. Everything. And I've made lots of notes. I will say that. I won't share that. But we don't bring the necessary professionalism or seriousness on the road. And that's something that we can fix. And that's something we're going to have to fix. Was he throwing the travel team, the travel crew under the bus for their terrible road record?
The get ready crew? Is that what he's saying?
I think so.
The stay, like Vin Baker and those dudes? Is that who he was throwing under the bus? He was saying that they're not approaching the game with all the appropriate seriousness?
I don't know. But the first comment on this on Twitter is someone who's like, wow, both the travel crew and the equipment manager taking public shots this year. Wild. And this is my thing with Doc, man. And this is like, it's becoming, I loved Doc Rivers as a player. I thought he was a really good coach with the Celtics. I liked some of the stuff he did with the Clippers, but he's just turning into this guy who blames everything on everyone else. And when you get to the point where you're blaming the travel crew for you not having a good record on the road, like, you've lost the thread.
I mean, Doc is, I don't know, whatever it is. It's like half Doc Rivers, half Scooby-Doo. You know what I mean? Like, you can't figure out what the thing is with him. Oh, my.
Scooby-Doc.
Oh, my God, Scooby-Doc. We can't name Doc that, just in case I want to have Doc on the podcast, you know, if Doc is ever out of work again. You know what I mean? Like, you got to be careful with that. But the Bucks are a team on a confidence meter that, you know, like, I have more confidence. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not going to say that line. Ooh, baby. John, here's what I'm going to say, because John is going to delete it. You ready, John?
Yep. I don't disagree with anything you said. It just doesn't belong on the podcast.
Now to the team that's near and dear to John's heart. The Dallas Mavericks, who have won 7 in a row, who are now in that 4-5 playoff matchup that looks really, really enticing. Them and the Clippers, if that's what it winds up to be. Baby, you talk about something that's on the line for both franchises in a first round series, and the reward of it might be the Denver Nuggets. I don't know if I'd want any parts of that, but that seems really compelling. All right, so take Dallas winning 7 in a row. Golden State coming back home. 104-101. Golden State can't keep leads. They cannot hold leads. They've played in the most crunch time games this season. Dallas is the best crunch time team in the NBA this season. So many things came up for me last night, John. And I know I'm going to get your state of the Dallas Mavericks feeling about this. But so much came up for me. One, when Draymond Green is right, I completely get it. Worth all of the trouble. That's like a woman dealing with a dude who does all the bad, not all the bad things, but just all the dumb stuff. And like, I'm going to dump him. I'm going to leave him. And then she comes home and boom, rose petals and dinner just cooked. All right, I'll give you another week. Like, he just does all the good things, all the things that gives you a stay of execution, all the things that not anybody else can really, really do. That block shot of Daniel Gafford under the rim and saving it and all that, plus a subsequent layup. Like, he is unique in that way. Klay Thompson, baby, I don't care what the numbers say. He looks shaky down the stretch. I just see shades of the shakiness, shades of that shot he took against the Lakers that had Steve Kerr pulling his hair out. And I think it was game four of the Western Conference semis last year. Like, I still see that guy that's still trying to chase it, not the guy that's accepting where he is. But less to that point, I have concerns about Stephen Curry, John. I won't say concerns. Yeah, concerns is the right word. I was going to say worry. But there's concerns about Steph. Like, Steph's March, and so many people were looking at that one game where Steph barely played 30 minutes and Steve Kerr was saying, hey, we can't have Steph come save us every game and all sort of type of stuff. Maybe he played that wrong, but his general premise I can rock with. Because since the All-Star break, and mind you, Steph has never been a big free throw guy because he takes a lot of threes. He takes so many threes, that means he's going to play further from the basket. He's a great finisher at the rim, but he doesn't go there as much as he used to. I don't think he ever really went there, but oh, so often anyway. In the 19 games after the All-Star break, he's went to the line 47 times. Now, part of that is he doesn't get the calls because he's not flailing away and he doesn't campaign and politic with the refs as much. But also part of that, John, is this increased physicality that we talked about earlier, that I talked about with Joel Embiid. Stephen Curry, who is, you know, bigger than he used to be. This is in 2016 Stephen Curry that, you know, had the knee issue in the 2016 finals and, you know, Cleveland was sort of starting to pick on and hunt. Like, this isn't that guy. But he's also not the guy that's going to relentlessly attack the rim. And if you're able to knock him off of his spot, then that changes things. That changes things drastically. Like, since the All-Star break, John, he's only shot 40% from the field. March, he's averaging 22, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Like, those are low numbers, and you forget the man just turned 36 years old, and he's not a 36, a big, hulking, strong, 255 pounds of granite, 36. He's a skill, a finesse player in a league where the officials are allowing more physicality. I think this was his worst month since January of 22. And that month didn't look like this. I think that month he still averaged 27. So it's a lot going on there. And I'm very curious if he winds up turning it around because they're going to be in the play-in. Like, I don't think they're catching the Lakers. They're a game and a half behind. The Lakers are surging because the Lakers have had Brooklyn and Toronto their last two games. Like, they've had literally the Washington Generals the last two games. So I don't see the Lakers. I don't see Golden State getting out of that 9-10 line, much less getting to 9 with, you know, 6 or 7 games remaining. And I'm concerned about the effectiveness of Stephen Curry and how, you know, this season where all these things have happened with Chris Paul being hurt, Klay Thompson being benched, Draymond, the drama with him, Andrew Wiggins being gone for a period of time, no Jordan Poole. Like, you know, in everything, cumulative effect, I'm very concerned. I'm concerned about how this is going to affect him going into the play-in. Now, conversely, John, your Dallas Mavericks, they had their 7-game win streak snapped, but they're still in that 4-5 line. Mm-hmm. Luka is entering, I won't say the back end, because he's already been on the back end. If they get to 50 wins, John, we might have to have a conversation about most valuable player.
I mean, that's what Luka's hoping for, right? Like, you saw it a couple weeks ago. I talked about this with Dan Devine, I think, yesterday, but I don't think it was on a podcast. And I was saying last year, I think it was in March, It was, is it Embiid or is it Jokic? And Embiid was like, I'm going for it. And you made it a point, I think, with when we talked to Jared Greenberg, of saying, like, I like when a guy says, I'm going for it. And a lot of people like that. It's part of the reason Embiid won the MVP over Jokic last year. Luka, I'd say a few weeks ago, maybe even the beginning of March, said, I'm going for it. He didn't do it publicly, but you could tell.
Mm-hmm.
He started playing more games. And I was telling you a story before we even got started about the other night, I think it was against Houston, when like his knee started bleeding and he was literally like, just wrap tape around it and I'll get back out there. You can tell that he wants to be on the floor. He wants to be playing as much as possible. He wants to put his imprint on the game. And I mean, the Mavericks have been playing well. Like you said, 7 wins in a row. Now, why did they lose to the Warriors last night? There's a couple of reasons. One, Draymond was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling my wife last night, and this is what I was telling people when the Warriors beat the Celtics in the finals a couple years ago. It's like, the Warriors play different basketball than everybody else, and it's mostly because of Draymond. It's a little bit because of Steph, but it's mostly because of Draymond. And because of that, you can have 20 wins in a row, but you're still coming in and playing a team that plays different than the teams you just beat for 20 wins. But Chris Paul looked fantastic. Like, anytime the Mavericks looked like they were getting ahead of steam and they were going to run away with this game, or they took a lead or whatever, Chris Paul would come in and just run stuff for like 6 or 7 minutes and looked like the old Chris Paul. It was like when no one else could make a shot or find a shot, boom, there's Chris Paul with a silky smooth shot from anywhere. He was setting people up with dimes. He was playing hellacious defense, mostly on Kyrie, honestly. And so Chris Paul was great. Draymond was great. That block you were talking about was fantastic. Andrew Wiggins is playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
It had almost nothing to do with Steph, who was like, okay. And we've been talking about this all year with like LeBron. When you get to your late 30s, it seems like today's NBA is you can play in your late 30s, but you're not going to be the same guy every night. You're not going to get to that top level every night. Some nights, sure. We've seen it from Steph. I mean, maybe not in March that I can remember, but we've seen some big games from him this year.
Yeah, of course.
But doing it every night is a lot harder. Luka right now is doing it every night, and he's great, but him and Kyrie can't do it by themselves, as great as they are. And right before the game, or a couple hours before the game yesterday, news came out that Derek Lively has a sore knee.
Yep.
And he's out indefinitely.
He commits the rest of the regular season.
Yeah. And like I jokingly said to someone, like, he's 19. He's probably going to wake up tomorrow and feel great, because that's what your body does when you're 19.
Yep.
But he's out indefinitely. And all of a sudden last night, you saw a lot of Dwight Powell, who hadn't been playing at all. All of a sudden, Dwight Powell was playing those Derek Lively role. And you saw how important Derek Lively's size is, because the Warriors were just eating up rebounds over and over and over, especially when Powell was on the floor. They played a big chunk of the second half with Powell and Maxi Kleba on the floor together.
Yep.
And those guys do not rebound.
Right.
And so like Luka became like the chief rebounder on the team. And that's not what they needed him to do at that point. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with the next week or two, or however long they are without Derek Lively, because when everything is going in the right direction, everyone is healthy, their whole, you know, 8 rotation, 9 rotation is healthy and playing well, the Mavericks can beat anyone in the league. But you take one important piece out and the whole thing could really fall like a Jenga tower.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and don't let me lose my second point. First point is on Chris Paul. Chris Paul, like, reminds me, you know what Chris Paul reminds me of? It's like when I was, you know, when you're younger and you're like in high school, or you're getting at that point and you're like playing music in your room and you're trying not to play it, but so loud. But sometimes something comes on and you just start blasting it, right? You just start blasting that music, whatever it is. For me, it was, and I can remember this, like, random instance vividly. I was playing some song on Tupac's All Eyes on Me. This had to have been like a couple years after the album came out. Like, Tupac was already dead. I think I was in high school. So this was probably like my freshman year, maybe my sophomore year of high school. I'm just playing it in the morning. And some song comes on. You know, you're up and you just need something sort of to get you going. So I'm listening to Pac as I'm getting dressed or whatever. My dad, for whatever, he hears the music. Like the room, my room is like literally right next to theirs. He comes in, all this cussing and N-words and all this other type of stuff, right? And then like one of those, like one of, you know, Pac's cronies gets on the mic and starts rapping. And my dad like just takes it, takes the volume on the boombox, turns it down. I was mad. But that's Chris Paul. Chris Paul's the guy that turns the volume down. Oh, I'm sure. Hey, for one, I bet Chris Paul turns the volume down on everything in his house. I bet you Chris Paul walks in. Poor Jada could be in there listening to the new Beyonce album. CP walk in, turn that down. But no, Chris Paul is like that guy that can turn the temperature down if all else fails. And that's what kind of, that's the one thing Steph doesn't do, because his whole thing is pressure, pressure, pushing, pushing, pushing. And that's sometimes where it's gotten Golden State in trouble. It's gotten Steph in trouble because he leans into the fire as opposed to being a fire extinguisher. But to your point about Dallas, 45 and 30, tied with New Orleans on that 5-6 line. A game ahead, both of them are a game ahead of Sacramento, a game ahead of Phoenix. Sacramento and Phoenix are tied at for seven at that play-in. That's just an all-out interesting battle for this whole play-in thing, which has been a rousing success for Adam Silver, who I've criticized in print and in other places. But this has created so many games of stakes. Every night, there is a game of stake on both sides of the aisle for whatever reason. We're not talking about who's positioning themselves for lottery balls or anything like that, partially because the draft sucks. But I love the fact that you have all these teams in playoff modes already. And John, I'm not sure if you know this, but my personal MVP standard, my line, is 50 games. Now, our friend of the show, Balmani Jones, has said to me privately, he said, hey, man, maybe you have to amend that because one player in today's talent-rich game may not be able to have that much of a profound effect on winning as much as it did back in the day. That could very well be true, but my line is my line. That's the reason I didn't vote for Russell Westbrook in 2017, because Oklahoma City won 48 games. Like, how valuable are you if your team ain't of value? But Luka Doncic, if Dallas goes 5-2 the rest of the way, that puts them right at the 50-game line. They could very well go 7-0, mind you. But if they go 5-2, and that puts them at 50, I don't think that gives them home court in the first round, which could sort of skew everything, like 5-seed MVP. But you would have to give Luka Doncic serious MVP consideration. When you think about his numbers from January, 34 points, 10.3 assists, 9.8 rebounds. I know the triple-double has gotten really skewed because, honestly, Russell Westbrook turned it into something that it really hasn't been, and it's been more of a value on it than perhaps it should be. Like, I'm not a fan of voting for a guy because of the number 10. Like, Luka averaging 9 rebounds compared to averaging 10 isn't going to make me want to vote for him anymore. But Dallas, A, being the most clutch team in the league, when clutch is as defined as NBA.com, is defined as games within 5 points or less with 5 minutes to go with a game. And they're the best clutch team in the league. That puts Dallas in the spot where you don't want to really play them in a playoff scenario, because you have two guys who can create shots late and they're starting to play really good defense. Now, the Derek Lively thing really hurts them. And you're going to have to try to find ways to compensate for the size and the length and the rebounding, which is really critical. I know rebounding doesn't sound like much of anything, but you have to complete the possession with a rebound. So like John, when he talked about, you know, Maxi Kleber being there and Gafford and all those guys, like being able to complete the possessions is going to be really critical for Dallas. But I still think that they're a team that you don't want to play because they're so damn good late in games. And Jason Kidd has found a way to figure out some defense with these guys in the second half of this season. Not just a party crasher. I'm just saying, you probably don't want to see this team in a 7-game series. I'm sure if there's a team below the 4 line, from outside the top three, let's just say including the Clippers, outside of Denver, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, you ask them what team they don't want to play out of the next six. And, you know, and I'm not including Houston because Houston has fallen back a little bit. They're three games back with, I think, seven to play. That's going to me, that's a bit too much ground for them to make up.
I want to ask you this question.
Sure.
I want to ask you this question.
Sure, sure.
And then we can get to the ad break right after.
Yeah,
this.
Yeah.
Dallas right now is sitting in fifth, as you said, tied with the Pelicans, who are in sixth, I'm assuming, because of head-to-head reasons. So right now, Dallas is set to play the Clippers, who are fourth. Now, if they drop to sixth, the top three could move around a little bit. But if they drop to sixth, there's a good chance that they end up against Oklahoma City in the first round instead of the Clippers. Now, sometimes teams will purposefully play with things to get the better matchup. So just between those two teams, if you were the Mavericks, would you rather play the Clippers in the first round or the Thunder in the first round, assuming that you could control that with your wins and losses?
I'd probably rather play the Thunder, and not just for reasons of Thunder youth and everything else, because the Thunder don't do stupid things. I think you're treading a little bit, right? Because you think of the Thunder as being this really young team that's playoff inexperienced and everything else, and you can probably take advantage of that. The Thunder don't do young, dumb shit. They don't do dumb things like turn the ball over, make bad decisions in late game situations. You even saw it last night. They just missed a couple of shots. They didn't do any young, dumb things. But if I'm on the 4-5 line and Oklahoma City is at the 3 line and I'm assuming Denver's at the 1 line, then I want to get off that 4-5 line because I don't want to play Denver in the second round. That's why I would do it. I would try to avoid Denver as much as possible if I have my druthers. But because John, the 1, 2, and 3 could almost be decided on the last day of the season, because these teams have been matched up and bunched up like this for the past 3 or 4 weeks, if not longer. I think the most that it's been has been maybe a 2.5 game spread. I want to say Minnesota was 2.5 games out and they came storming back and now they're right in the thick of things. There's a half game between, you know, all three teams. I don't think you'll be able to manipulate the last game of the season. You won't be able to manipulate it for 1, 2, and 3, but you also won't be able to manipulate it to keep yourself out of the play. And you might just have to play it and win just to keep yourself safe.
Yeah.
That's why. But Luka could very well elbow his way into some real MVP consideration. And that was not something that any of us could have expected as we close here. That's not something that any of us could have expected 2 months ago, a month ago, when they were just sitting and fiddling in the play-in. We'll be right back. Back on A Good Word here with producer John. John, one of the most confounding teams in the Eastern Conference, probably the most confounding, even more than the Bucks, who John has just let you know that he is not a believer in at all, is the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, they've had that stretch where they dominated the league and ran roughshod through 17-1 from January to mid-February, right before the All-Star break. And Donovan Mitchell elevated himself to MVP discussion, but they were without Darius Garland and Evan Mobley for a huge part of that. I think they only played like 7 games in that 18-game stretch. But as a whole, they're sitting in that third spot. New York is trending down because that's what, you know, shockingly, that's what the Knicks do when their bodies start falling that we don't like talking about. But for the Cavs, after that 17-1 stretch, if the math is correct, they're 29-29 for the rest of the season. And I don't know how to contextualize that because every team has a stretch where, or every serious contender has a stretch where they legit just run through everybody. Or at least I think so. Remember, John, we had that exercise a few weeks ago where I just brought up every championship team of like modern vintage having a stretch of 2 months or 6 weeks where they took everything seriously. They blew you out the water. You had no chance of winning games. The Cavs have actually had that. It was during a not so great stretch. I think they beat the Bucks 3 times in that stretch, and the one loss they had was to the Bucks. It would have been 18 in a row, and they played the Bucks 2 nights later and beat them again. but it's hard to place this team in proper context because, A, you don't know how you're going to figure things out with Mobley and with Darius Garland and Mobley and Jared Allen because they're more light in the pants. They're not like big, girthy dudes. You know, in the playoffs, especially when you're playing under the rim, it's going to be about who can throw who out of the way, who can get rebound. Rebounding becomes so much more important in the playoffs than it is a regular season thing. Like, I don't know the exact stats, but I feel like rebounding is like the important thing, like the saying, no rebounds, no rings. Like, it's a little bit different now because you got three-point shooting and everything else, so you have more long rebounds after long shots. But being able to control the glass is such a huge, huge thing. And Mobley and Jared Allen are really good rebounders, but they're so light, you wonder if teams are going to be able to sort of handle them, manhandle them. Then you have Donovan Mitchell, who, like I said, was playing MVP ball when they were without Mobley and Garland. 28-5-7. He handled the ball. He was able to spray out to shooters. There was space there because you were playing with more of the Max Struces and Isaac Okoros and guys like that who were taking the minutes. They were playing a little bit smaller. Jared Allen was the one real big on the floor. You were even playing Georges Niang a lot more, all that type of stuff. And usually, players of Donovan Mitchell's pedigree, shall we say, he's in year 7. This is his second team. Multi-time All-Star, All-NBA, all of that stuff. He probably would have been All-NBA this year, but he wound up missing that chunk of games because of the knee and the PRP injection, and now he's trying to come back and get it back. He would have been All-NBA this year had he continued to play and play on that trajectory. But there's always this lingering thing about his upcoming free agency. He has a player option, only side player option. He can opt out after next season, rather. Not a player option this year. He can opt out after next season. So it's always the weird sort of dance. And he can extend this summer, I believe. And Dan Gilbert, the Cavs owner, who has really been out of the public eye since suffering a stroke 3 or 4 years ago, came out earlier this week, or maybe it was late last week, and said, you know, I think Donovan's going to re-sign. And Donovan has been the guy to basically avoid all free agency talk because it doesn't do him any good. And he talked about a little bit with me on a piece that is coming up, but he didn't talk about free agency as a whole. He just basically said, hey, look, you know, that was the one summer where everything was just so uncertain for me because I wanted out of Utah. And, you know, I thought I was going here. I wound up going to Cleveland, and that's fine. And that's the way that it worked out. But because Cleveland, and this is my words, now because Cleveland is not the free agent destination, because the Cavs have not advanced in the playoffs with him, you're going to have all these questions. That's why this year is so important for them. But usually if a guy gets traded after his rookie deal, he winds up going somewhere he wants to go. Usually, right? John, can you think of a player of that level of pedigree who wanted out and wound up going somewhere he didn't want to go? Like, am I missing someone?
Did Kyrie want to go to Boston?
Kyrie didn't want to go to Boston. And you know what? Paul George did not want, I don't say he didn't want to go, but I don't think Oklahoma City was his preferred destination. Did Paul George go somewhere else after Indiana before Oklahoma City?
Because he got traded when Kawhi signed with the Clippers. He got traded from OKC. So he got traded from Indiana to OKC, and everyone thought he's just going to sign with LA when he hits free agency, and he signed with OKC traded to the Clippers.
Right.
But yeah, so those are two examples.
Yeah, but basically it's not a lot of examples. There are examples. It's not a lot of examples. And Donovan is like, you know, he's 28. He'll be 29 when he's able to hit free agency. So, you know, it's one of those things where you have to start looking about what your future is going to be. And everybody looks and points at the New York Knicks. But remember, the Knicks have made their commitment by signing or trading for OG Anunoby. And he's going to command a huge chunk of money when he hits free agency. You know, granted, he's got the elbow thing right now and all this other type of stuff. But clearly, you don't trade RJ Barrett and the pieces that they traded for OG if you don't believe that he is a significant part of your future. And you're also probably going to do something with Jalen Brunson and, you know, locking him up to a max extension because, you know, he's earned it. And I don't even know how Donovan Mitchell even fits in with that group, with the players that they have. You have the questions about how Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland fit as two smaller guards already. Now, granted, Jalen Brunson's a little more on the thicker side, like he doesn't profile as small, or at least as small as Darius Garland. But, you know, you get my point. The Cavs are just so interesting to me as a first-round team. As interesting as Milwaukee is, to be perfectly honest. Not because there's so much on the line, like there's this urgency, but it's just one of those teams in the East that you look at and you're saying, which one are you? Which team are you? Are you the team that went 17-1 and gave you that stretch of games, albeit with a, you know, a lighter schedule? Or are you the team that had that terrible three-game stretch a couple of weeks ago where you get blown up by Miami twice and you lose to Minnesota? Those are playoff teams that have designs on going deep, and you have designs on getting out of the first round. And you're a game and a half up on the surging-ish Orlando Magic. I don't even know if they're surging as much as they're just playing better than the Knicks. And despite all of that, the Cavs, despite the injuries, despite some of this other stuff, if the Cavs go 6-2 the rest of the way, or 4-2 rather, excuse me, they're going to have another 50-win season. That's a rousing success when you consider the games that Donovan has missed, the games that Evan Mobley has missed, the games that Garland has missed. Like, it's just one of those things where they are a much better put together team this year than last year. They shoot more threes. You have the Max Strus's, the Isaac Okoros, even Tristan Thompson, who can throw some bodies around, Georges Niang. You're much better equipped for playoff basketball this year than you were this time last year. And the Knicks were probably the worst matchup for you because the Knicks were just going to bludgeon anybody they played in round one. They just happened to play you. And now they're looking at, on that three line, you could be playing Indiana in the first round, which, considering Tyrese Haliburton has not played, you know, up to his standards, A, since his own hamstring injury, B, since the changes in officiating, maybe that's the matchup you would want. The Knicks are a game and a half out of six, but also they're a game and a half away from catching you. The Miami Heat, half game out of six. I just told you about those two games that the Miami Heat put the beat down on Cleveland, plus being a playoff-equipped ball club. So it's just the Cavs are just an interesting team that I think we should really keep an eye on. I think they have good talent. They might have too much talent. Like, I've been, you know how I feel about Evan Mobley, John. I look at Evan Mobley after his freshman year at USC. Some people saw Chris Bosh. I saw Tim Duncan. He's more Slim Duncan than Tim Duncan. You know what I mean? Like, he hasn't put on that extra girth that makes him an unmovable object in the post, that negates the need of having Jared Allen. He has to play four because he can't play five, which completely compromises, I won't say compromises, it changes the way that you can build around Donovan Mitchell and around Evan Mobley in the meantime. And Evan Mobley is developing the shot. I think he's shooting around 38 from three this year, but on very low volume. I think he's taking less than two a game. I don't have a huge problem with that. I don't think everybody has to take and make threes all the time, but he has to have sweet spots on the floor where he knows that he can get shots while also being enough of a threat to create space for your smallish guards to get downhill and into the lane. So it's just going to be – I'm not volunteering for the Cleveland whomever first-round matchup. I just think they're really intriguing and a team that we have to pay attention to, not just for the remainder of the regular season and the playoffs, but for the summer as well. I think the playoffs will tell a lot about what we are to think of this Cavaliers franchise, considering we got a lot of questions about the Eastern Conference. And if there's a team that needs to, you know what I almost compare it to, John? I almost compare it to in a completely different like way and fashion. But in 2007, the Cavs went to the NBA Finals. The Cavaliers of LeBron James and Drew Gooden and Jonas Ilgauskas, and everybody bagged on how bad the team was. But that team actually won 50 games, and they were the second seed in the Eastern Conference. Detroit at that time was aging. There was no more Ben Wallace and Chauncey and Rip, and all those guys were getting older. Boston seized the opportunity of, we got draft picks, we got draft capital, and it's a weak Eastern Conference. It's been a weak Eastern Conference. Shaq and Dwayne Wade are are going this way, because Miami was going this way after winning in 06, we have an opportunity to push all our chips in, go get some veteran players, use this draft pick, and see what happens. And that's what birthed the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen big three in Boston, because they had the assets to do it. And they looked around at the conference, Danny Ainge did, and said, now's as good of a time as possible, because there's no one really, there's a vacuum at the top. Now, you would look in this year and say, what about Boston at the top this year? You're absolutely right. Boston is really that good as a regular season team, but that's why I said this year in the playoffs is going to be a tell. Because if you look around and Boston flames out again, or if Boston doesn't win a championship, if they lose in the conference finals again to one of these teams that you don't have a lot of confidence in, or they get to the finals and are shown to not be as great as you think they are, and maybe they're a product of playing in the Eastern Conference, then one of these teams that has draft capital, that has some of these players that maybe they're in a talent vacuum, they're going to wind up trying to make some type of big move, because they're seeing an opening at the top of the Eastern Conference. And one of these teams that could be a party crasher, one of these teams that could be, you know, a big-time deflator is Cleveland. They've got a lot on the line this year, and I think they're really fascinating. Milwaukee, of course, has a lot on the line. Miami, a lot on the line. Philadelphia, a whole lot on the line. A lot on the line. So I think the Eastern Conference playoffs as a whole will be fascinating, and I think despite the number of quality teams in the Eastern Conference, aside from Boston, I think you have a number of quality storylines that we will be able to follow. John, it is time for the viewing guide. What games will you be watching closely for the rest of this week?
I have two.
Okay.
One depends on whether or not Kawhi Leonard plays. The Nuggets play the Clippers tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Clippers got beat up by the Kings last night without Kawhi.
Yep.
I'm always interested in this matchup. Going back to, I think, the bubble, when the Nuggets kind of put the fear of God into the Clippers, and they've always kind of been like a boogeyman for the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
The Nuggets are in an interesting place in that Jamal Murray hasn't played in a while. Jokic has kind of thrown the team on his back, but that's not how they like to play.
Right.
They like it when it could be balanced and Jokic kind of runs the show, but everyone gets a piece. So I'm going to be interested to see if Jamal Murray can play. If not, can Jokic kind of throw the team on his back and beat up on the Clippers in the way they have in the past? But that's really only interesting if Kawhi plays. If he doesn't, or I guess another game that I'm interested in, is the Warriors-Mavs rematch on
mm-hmm.
Friday
mm-hmm.
in Dallas. Like we said, the Mavericks are tied with the Pelicans, so they could fall out of that number five spot. They could fall to six. They could even be in danger of falling into the playoffs. They are in the play-in. They need to, you know, start winning games again. I know there was only one loss, but they can't take it for granted. The Warriors have less pressure on them now because the Rockets have started getting beat up again. They start playing better teams. They're getting beat up again. So there's a lot more pressure on Dallas than there is on the Warriors. It's really hard to beat an NBA team two times in a row. The Mavericks should come out and play well at home in that game. If they don't, then the Derek Lively missing thing becomes an even bigger problem and something else that they need to solve before the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. And I'm really, like I said before, like we said earlier, really intrigued by Dallas. Not so. I'm concerned about Golden State because I'm concerned about Steph. For me, it is the 7-8 game in the Eastern Conference right now, Miami-Philly. And I'm sure neither team wants to play each other in the play-in. They'd rather, if it's their druthers, they'd rather play each other in the 7-8 than the 9-10, which will certainly not be, you know, possible because Chicago and Atlanta have no chance of catching either team. But I'm sure both teams want to get out of the play-in. Philly is two games out of Philly's two games away from Indiana, excuse me. Miami is a half game away from Indy. That's going to be an interesting game in Miami on Thursday night. I don't think it's a TNT game, but I will be watching that one pretty damn closely. Also, Sunday night, Minnesota, because they're in that dogfight for 1, 2, and 3 against the Lakers on Sunday night in LA. I don't know if that's the first game of LA coming back from this road trip, but it will be an interesting game because, of remember the last time that was the game where LeBron made the business decision to not try to chase down Anthony Edwards in a fast break? And we were like, oh, no, 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 not these afterburners don't work. These afterburners don't work. And I'm going to save my Achilles from hurting myself trying to go after this young man. Did you see? Look, man, I need Anthony Edwards in a dunk contest next year. That's all. I need Adidas. I need his people to convince that man, because every time I look up, that man is doing something crazy. You tell me the dunk contest is dead, and I'm just telling you that Anthony Edwards and Jalen Green ain't in it. That's it. But John, that is the viewing guide for this week. Thank you, sir. And that is all that we have for you on today's episode of The Good Word. Again, thanks to producer John, who puts together the rundown, who does so much behind the scenes along with everybody else who helps put this podcast together. Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. And I'll be back on Monday with another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.